for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 680 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a fun conversation with Kevin Shinnick about his upcoming Kickstarter project called Host Mortem. Kevin is the host and time-traveling detective of the Emmy-winning series Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego. He's also an Emmy-winning writer behind Robot Chicken and a celebrated author. He writes and stars in Host Mortem. Here's the book's description. Host Mortem follows TV hosts Kevin and Greg Lee from Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, who are transported to the year 1947 by a time portal at Comic-Con. They soon find themselves enmeshed in a murder mystery involving Humphrey Bogart's legendary noir film, The Big Sleep. When one of the stars winds up dead, Kevin and Greg's knowledge of random trivia might be the key to solving this Hollywood caper. This 180-plus page graphic novel will come from Clover Press and will be an engaging murder mystery that answers the question, are hosts really smart or do they just have the answers? We talk about how Host Mortem came to be, who the main characters are, and what else we can expect from Kevin in the months ahead. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Kevin has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Host Mortem is a graphic novel from Emmy-winning writer and host Kevin Shinnick. It's described as L.A. Confidential meets the In-Laws as two real-life game show hosts from the 1990s attempt to solve a series of murders in the 1940s. And I'm talking with the creator, Kevin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to talk with you. Now, we're actually a little early in the game this time. It hasn't actually started yet, the Kickstarter, but you can go to Kickstarter and go, let's see, the actual description is Host Mortem graphic novel from Emmy-winning writer and host.
That sums it up.
Yeah, that'll take you right to the place. You can sign up to get an early notification and good things like that.
It's free to follow us. If anything we say here today interests you, follow us, because the more numbers we get up there, the quicker we'll be able to launch and the quicker we'll be able to get this, what I'm finding to be an amazing book, a beautifully drawn book too, into your hands. So that's my encouragement.
Looking forward to that. Now, let me read a little bit from your very own website, which I kind of...
Oh, okay. Got. Here we go.
It's kevinshinnick.com, and that's S-H-I-N-I-C-K.
Correct.
Just in case people want to know. In the bio, it says, Kevin Shinnick doesn't just create pop culture, he's also part of it. Beginning his career as the host and squadron leader of the popular PBS series, Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego, Kevin has gone on to become an Emmy Award-winning writer, a number one best-selling author, and a celebrated comic book creator, as well as an actor, director, and multiple Annie Award producer. And I have to say, if I was to read all this good stuff, we'd
be here all day.
We wouldn't be able to talk about the book. So let me jump down to the comic
section. You can cherry pick that, yeah.
Yeah. A fan favorite among comic book readers, Shinnick has written for both Marvel and DC, contributing stories to runs on Batman, Avenging Spider-Man, The Flash, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Superior Spider-Man Team-Up, while also creating new personas for Web of Spider-Man, Superior Carnage, and Axis Hobgoblin.
Right.
I'm going to jump a little bit down here. Now, there's a couple of things I got to get to. The very last thing on the bottom, it says you were a popular 90s sci-fi quiz show that landed him in the pages of teen magazines, which has been a little while, onto trading cards and into his own action figure.
That's right.
I have to say, you're the first person I've talked with that had their very own action figure.
Well, part of that is because I am one of the writers on a series called Robot Chicken, which if you know pop culture, you know we have a lot of fun over there poking fun at all the IP that's passed our way from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. And ages ago, when I first started with them, it's a very high bar to hit over there, how many sketches they expect you to hand in every day. So you write whatever you can think of. And I wrote a Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego sketch. And Seth Green, who's one of the creators, at one point laughed at it and said, how do you remember this series? And I was like, I was the host of this series. And he was like, you're kidding me. So they created an action figure for me. And we brought it to life on, I think it was season 3 of Robot Chicken.
Was it readily available? Because I looked on the internet trying to find it.
No. We created it just for, it's in-house. So That's why we used it. I have one. Robot Chicken has one. I think there's a third one because whenever they use it, they pull it out of the mothballs and do a sketch with Kevin Shinnick, Squadron Leader Kevin Shinnick.
Because there's a picture, it has like four pictures in it and across it. It's got you on the left, and then it's got you as a drawing, and then it's got you as half Spider-Man, and then the one on the far right, it looks like it's the action figure. That's it. Okay, because I could not find it, and I was going like, what a shame to have an action figure and you can't find it anywhere.
No, it's a novelty item that only a few people have. But the drawing, as you mentioned, was I had turned Mad Magazine into an animated sketch comedy show for Cartoon Network for a number of years. And put me in Mort Drucker was the artist who did the style that is most known with Mad. And we employed a gentleman named Tom Richman, who was the current Mort Drucker of the time, who aped his style. So that's kind of a Mad Magazine take on there. And I think the Spider-Man thing is from I created one of the Marvel Spider-Man is what it was called. Unfortunately, it doesn't stick out with that name because it could be anything. But on Disney Plus, you can find Marvel Spider-Man, which is this animated Spider-Man show that I created. And in a weird twist of fate, I'm the only person, I think, who's written Spider-Man for the comics, the stage, and the screen. And when I say that, people think, wait, did you write Julie Taymor's debacle? And I say, no. About a decade earlier, it didn't get as much publicity, but I did the first ever feature length Spider-Man presentation at Radio City Music Hall. And then it toured the country for like 40 cities. And we had an amazing time. So it was only like a decade later that Julie Taymor's came. And I like to say mine was cheaper and less people got injured.
Now, there's one other thing we got to mention on here is that you're also known for being the voice of Bruce Banner.
That's right.
Incredible Hulk's brainy alter ego. How many shows did you voice Bruce Banner?
I did him on Marvel Spider-Man. I did him on Guardians of the Galaxy. And I did him on Avengers. And Marvel's Avengers is what I did it for.
Okay, so that's good.
Those were all the series that were on at the time that I was Bruce Banner.
Okay, now I got to talk about the one thing that leaped out at me because I happen to love this show quite a lot, and I never hear anybody talk about it. So you were actually a voice on Cartoon Network's Justice League Action.
Yeah, I was. I think I was Atomic Dad. I was that crazy dad, robotic dad. But that was because working at Warner Brothers. I did double duty for Mad. I did so much. I did most of the voices. I helped write it. I helped produce it and direct it and all that stuff. But you're in house over there. So sometimes they'd come by and be like, hey, could you audition for this role that we're doing over here? And I'd be like, yeah. So it was a perfect place to work if you loved comics and you loved all those things. Scooby-Doo was down the hall and Tom and Jerry's down the hall and everything. So it was all under one roof. That same building is gone now, which is sad.
Well, it's interesting because Justice League Action was supposed to be a companion piece for Teen Titans Go.
Yes, you're right. You're right. That's true. That's very true. I always like to think, it was funny because Teen Titans Go, in my mind, they had taken Mad off the air prior to that. And it was just Teen Titans at that time. And I was actually told that we were number one on Cartoon Network when they pulled us in our fourth or in our go ahead. We hit it into our fifth season. But the reason they did was because there was no toy line attached to it. They couldn't license anything because the things that were already known, like Alfred E. Newman, Spy vs. Spy, and all those things, we're already licensed. So I think what happened was they said, all right, we don't have MAD anymore, but what if we wanted a show that was both MAD and Teen Titans? And in my mind, that's how they came up with Teen Titans Go.
Okay. Okay. Teen Titans Go is an acquired taste to me.
I
liked
it.
Sometimes I liked it. I mean, they had Marv Wolfman and George Perez on there.
Yeah,
I thought that was a wonderful thing to do. But the Justice League Action, a lot of the episodes were written by one of my favorite writers is Paul Dini.
Yeah, it's true.
Lots of them. And golly, they're great. If you want to see them right now, it's on Prime. I think you have to buy it in order to be able to watch them. But I happily bought them because I love that show. It's of course, it's got Kevin Conroy doing the voice of Batman. Yeah. And he is still, when I read Batman comics, when Batman speaks.
Is that what you hear?
That's the voice I hear.
That's right awesome. There. That's awesome. Yeah.
So great. But just so many good things. But it's wonderful stories. All kinds of amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
If you haven't seen Justice League Action, I highly recommend you get to see it because it's really good. I mean, it doesn't – of course, the highlights, of course, are the Bruce Timm stuff. I mean, he did
wonderful
stuff. But this was one of those ones that people just didn't hear about. And I was forever telling people, watch this show. And then immediately went right off the air the moment I started saying that. So
and what's crazy is nowadays, you know, it's not even on now. But even when it is on, people have difficulty finding certain shows. You know, I think the day of scrolling or not scrolling, but like browsing are gone. You have to, it's kind of a destination entertainment system now. You know, usually you have to hear about something and then go find it. You know, very rarely do you stumble upon something.
That's true. And that's sad because
I know. In fact, someone Instagrammed me the other day, like, where can I, they said, why isn't MAD on HBO Max? And I think you can get it on all seasons on Amazon Prime. But, you know, in this day and age, it's like finding a needle in a haystack to find certain shows, to figure out where they are.
Yeah, what you have to do is ask what streaming service plays this show.
I do that all the time. I get to it in my phone before I watch something. I'm like, where am I going?
What's the place?
Tell me.
Yeah, I like that stuff. So, are you doing still voices and stuff like that?
Absolutely. I got a couple of things that I can't talk about yet because they haven't been released yet. But I still do voices, and you know, I still act. A funny thing was, you know, to bring it back to Host Mortem a little bit. I created Host Mortem as a graphic novel that I'm really excited by. But what's so funny is you talk about manifesting things. I wrote this and then I thought, okay, well, oh, this is great. You know, hosting's back in my life. Now I put it there. And then I said, well, I should see if my agent thinks I can get more hosting gigs. And so I talked to him and, you know, certain journeys end quickly. And then all of a sudden an audition came across my desk and I auditioned for it. And as a result, I am now playing legendary host Dick Clark from American Bandstand in the new Michael Jackson movie that's coming out later this year. So it was just kind of funny that I felt like I shook the host tree this year, and that's what fell out.
Well, that's what happens sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
It just depends. Your timing has to be right. You have to things at the right moment.
It's very true.
Things happen. So it's just kind of – now talk about your co-host on this.
Greg Lee?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you guys get to know each other? Because you were on, let's see if I can get this straight. You were on one of the Carmen Sandiegos and he was on the other.
Correct. He was on Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Mm-hmm. And that had a successful run helping kids figure out about geography. And then at some point they realized kids knew enough about geography and didn't know enough about history. So they revamped the show and they called it Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego? The link was still Lynn Thigpen, who played the chief, and of course Carmen. But Greg played himself as a classic, like 1940s gumshoe detective. And I was a time traveling detective. So, about a year ago, I love noir. I love film noir. I love murder mysteries, love all that stuff. So I thought, well, you know what? I'd love to create one of my own. And I've written a lot for Marvel, for DC, but there was a time where I said, you know, maybe I'll put my energies into my own thing, creating at least one thing for myself. So I want to create this detective. And I'm like, well, you know, I have such a good research of all the other detectives out there. I was like, what's unique? What can I do that no one else can do? And then it dawned on me. I was like, wait a minute. I'm staring at the answer. I, as I said, played myself as a time traveling detective. And I said, and it's this, this idea that I had was a murder mystery that happened in the 1940s because I like noir. And so I thought, wait a minute, between my love of time travel, both in Host Mortem and on the Carmen Sandiego show, and Greg's 1940s gumshoe, I said, I think we have a storyline here, which is how we came up, just to repeat what you said, the story of two fake detective game show hosts from the 1990s who have to solve a series of real murders in the 1940s. And the funny thing was, our shows were both very popular, but Greg and I never met for like 20 years. And then about 5 years ago, maybe a little bit more now, a mutual friend had a film in a film festival, and we both went to it, and that was the first time we met. And we hit it off famously, we exchanged numbers, and then never spoke again. And when I had this idea, I thought, you know what's really going to help me get off my butt and do this was if I could visually picture Greg and I doing this. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, Greg, we only talked like once, but how would you feel about going back in time with me and solving some murders? And to his credit, he was like, I'm in. So that really, you know, had me up and running. And I just kind of embraced everything. The fact that I didn't know Greg that well at the time made it also like an odd couple. You know, like almost like I make the older reference, the in-laws, you know, two people thrown together who probably shouldn't be trying to solve a crime. And yet they are. And in a nice twist of fate, a good friend of mine and a mentor for many years was the great Tony Randall, who, for those who are too young to remember, played the original Felix Unger in the TV series. I say original in the TV series. Jack Lemmon played him in the movie. And so, like I said, I leaned into this odd couple version of two people trying to solve murders. And my thought was, and this is the kind of the tagline of the whole book, is are hosts really smart or do they just have the answers? Because I have so many facts in my head, but do they all add up to anything? I would love for them to, other than, you know, just a fun party trick or a party thing to start a conversation. But could all the facts I have in my head meld together to help solve like a murder? And so that was the premise of this book. And one of those facts that I knew or discovered was if you do love film noir, like I do, you're a big fan of The Big Sleep with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. And this is what I mean by, I'm sure people know this now, but they didn't prior to 1990, which is if you're a big fan of The Big Sleep, you know it came out in 1946 and it starred the people I said it did. However, I discovered, or they discovered in the 1990s when they found the footage, that an earlier cut of this film existed in 1945 and was shown to a very few amount of people. They showed it like an army barracks. And then they realized they needed to go back in and recut some stuff to give more scenes between Bogart and Bacall. But in doing that, certain characters were recast. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if someone in this current version was murdered and no one really knew other than a few people that there was two people who played these roles prior, and wouldn't they be suspects? So it's like that's the end to say, like, wow, are my facts worthy of anything? They certainly are here in the 21st century, but what if I went back to the point where people didn't know these facts and see if I can put them to work there?
Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me, was it Back to the Future where the one guy comes back with a magazine that says who's going to win the Super Bowl number of years?
Exactly.
And so that kind of stuff, kind of, you know, you can tell sometimes what's going to happen before it does.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and what's so funny is Tom Wilson, who plays Biff in Back to the Future, is a friend of mine. And he's been so supportive of this. And it's just amazing to what I love so much about this book, and I hope others will too, is it takes so many of my interests, which I think I share with a lot of people. It's about hosts. It's about movie trivia. It's about film noir. It's about trivia in general. It's about murder mysteries. And it wraps it all up in this tongue-in-cheek comic. And it's a very meta murder mystery, if I can say. But, you know, it's hosts, humor, and homicide. So how can you go wrong?
Well, of course, that made me want to ask you, what's it like to write yourself as a character? I mean,
it's a real pain in the neck.
Well, you know, you're writing about something you know, which obviously is yourself and the character. But how did you tackle that? What did you have to do?
Well, you know what's interesting is I think most people see Greg and I, they have a certain persona of us because we were both hosts of children's game show hosts. So you have a kind of a, not a goody two shoes, but a very clean image. And this is an adult graphic novel. And this is about murder and things like that. So it was fun to try and lean more into the more mature side of it and show more of my personality and more of Greg's personality. And like I said, we get along famously now. But it's funny because we are very different. And so I think I lean into the things that people don't know about us just from watching the Carmen Sandiego series. And it starts with us finding a time portal at Comic-Con. So we're already, you know, leaning into our personas there.
Don't you hate when that happens?
You know, too many times, too many times.
When I was an early Star Trek fan, and I was part of a club, and we wanted to write adventures as if we were a Star Trek cast. And yeah. The way this all started was a lightning bolt came in and struck a VCR. We were watching Star Trek at the time. Kind of dates it, say a VCR, but it struck the VCR and it transported us to the bridge of the Enterprise.
Oh my God, I love that. I love that.
That's where I always say, don't you hate when that happens? Those kind of things.
Well, it's basically what Seth MacFarlane did with the Orville, right? He just has the power to say, I'm going to make a series where I am Captain Kirk.
Yep. Pretty much. Of course, one of my favorites was Galaxy Quest.
Oh, I love Galaxy Quest. That's like a perfect movie. In fact, I think David Mamet refers to it as the perfect movie.
Well, they do polls. What's the best Star Trek movie? Oftentimes, that's the top Star Trek movie.
Well, it is. It essentially is. You know, I mean, it's the tropes of it. That's for sure. And that's the closest we got to the best comedy.
Yeah, gosh, it was such a great movie. I always like when people don't know what the movie's about and they sit and watch it and they're like, flummoxed. That was such a great movie.
Yeah, isn't that great?
I love when those kinds of things happen.
I love when you show a movie to someone that you love and they love it as much as you do. It's such a gift, you know?
Yeah. So did you have to make changes in yourself or did you do things differently because you probably left out some stuff and included some
stuff? Well, like I said, I mean, you know, there's enough that I can share that people don't know about me without having to change anything. You know, like I said, I think people have a very limited view of who Greg and I are because they only know us from watching Carmen Sandiego. Fortunately, Carmen Sandiego does have a big fan base, so they do know us, but they only know that persona. So that's why I thought it'd be kind of fun to, you know, peel the curtain back a little bit and say, hey, there are these two guys who not only get to know just as real people, but also how would they handle themselves, you know, in the 1940s, kind of a fish out of water type thing. So, yeah, that was the fun of that.
Are you a true crime fan by any chance?
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
That probably helps.
How could you tell? It certainly does. But I also, like I said, I love true crime, but I also love mysteries. You know, true crime sometimes can get just a little, I like it when it's intriguing. When it's just gory, it's like, okay. But what I love about mysteries is trying to figure it out. I'm a huge Columbo fan. You know, I love Sherlock Holmes. I mean, I've written for Batman, you know, the world's greatest detective. So it's kind of like, that's the kind of stuff that really fuels me because when I sit down to write something, I put my fan hat on first. I want to be a reader who is going to sit down and enjoy this. So I think, well, what would I want to see? I don't want this to be easy. I don't want it to be, you know, I want it to be fun, but I also want it to be a legitimate murder mystery that I have to figure out because if it's just funny and not serious, I'm not going to be interested. So I worked very hard to make this a complex murder mystery too. So I'm hoping to see if audiences or readers can figure it out before our two hosts, Greg and I, figure it out on our own. If we even figure it out on our own. Spoiler alert, we're not very good at our jobs as detectives.
Well, you got to figure it out as you go along, so you got to learn on the job.
Well, the funny thing, too, is so I'm putting this together. It's a great collaboration with my main artist is an artist named Damian Torres, and he's wonderful, and I discovered him by a friend had sent me his work, and it was exactly what I was looking for to bring the 1940s to life in the way that I was looking for. And then I've got a wonderful colorist named Pippa Bolin. My letterer is Taylor Esposito. And then at some point I thought, this graphic novel is 180-plus page graphic novel, but it's basically four different issues. And each issue is narrated in a very noir way by a different character. So then I got the idea that it'd be fun to have maybe a different style for each narrator. So that's when I was turned on to Andrea Schiavone. And he is an Italian artist who I found that I love his work. It's got a very golden age look to it that I thought would really play into one of the characters that's from the 1940s in the story. And so we all have come together to do this. But why I mention this is I haven't even shared with them who the murderer is yet. So they're drawing this and working on this in real time. So I didn't want it to influence anything leading up to it. So everybody's in the dark except for me.
Wow. Okay. So that's good. Because I am an editor for an indie comic. Mm-hmm. And what the writer does is he writes a page and he gives me the page and he has me read it and edit it. And then I give him a reaction to it. What did you think of it? And I said, well, he wanted one page to be very funny. And I had to come back and say, it's not funny enough. If you want this to be really funny, it's not there. And so he went back and rewrote it and made it funnier, which is kind of fun.
That's funny. Yeah.
I never know how things are going to go. I get to read the page when he gives it to me.
Yeah, exactly. It keeps it interesting, you know?
And it gives me a chance to react and kind of be the first reaction. Because as you well know, when you're doing comics and stuff like that, you spend a lot of time alone doing this stuff. And then suddenly the thing is done. You give it to people and you're praying and hoping that they actually like this thing that you spent months and months on. You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's but what so I do is I know every time I because to be fair in this world, no matter what I do, I can guarantee you I can find 10 people who love what I did and 10 people who hate what I did. So to me, it's like I set myself a certain goal and then I'm my own judge. Did I get to what I was trying to do? If I feel I did, then you're welcome to like it or dislike it or whatever. But I feel a sense of satisfaction that I at least achieved what I was going for. But, you know, as you said, this whole business is communication. And it's conveying ideas. And sometimes you need to rework the script. Sometimes you got to rework the art. But you just want to get your ideas across.
Yeah. Have you ever watched the animated movie Klaus around Christmas?
I did see it a while ago. But yeah.
I'm a huge fan of that movie. And the thing I've been doing, I've been watching stuff about where they made changes to it. They had a very different beginning and a very different ending.
Really?
Yeah. When I watched it, I was like, I'm so glad they didn't go those routes because they actually sat and they would get audience reaction and the audiences were kind of puzzled by some of the stuff that they were trying to do.
But isn't that fascinating? That's the kind of stuff I love and the kind of stuff that I tried to put into Hostmortem. All these behind the scenes things or, you know, I love director commentaries. I love little tidbits that I find or fun facts that I've discovered about history or characters or movies or whatnot. So I've tried to put a whole boatload of those fun facts in this as well. So you're going to learn something when you finish reading this graphic novel. You may not learn how to save a life, but you will know something probably ridiculous.
Very good. Okay, now I got to ask, because I always want to know how things got the way they are. Who came up with the title? Was that you?
It was me. You know, I kept trying to figure out what would be the title about this. You know, I don't own the rights to Carmen Sandiego. And so it's not it's about us. It's not about Carmen Sandiego. But I thought, how can I keep our audience engaged and let them know it's a murder mystery? Let them know it's tongue in cheek. Let them know all those things. And I was literally doing the dishes one night and it just hit me. And I was like, Hostmortem. And I thought, wow, I was so happy about that idea that it also spawned like the idea to do this as a straight novel as well, at least a different adventure, you know, like a prequel or other adventures with me. But Hostmortem, I thought, sums it up. And now you can go to hostmortem.com, and that's where I have it linked to the Kickstarter. So like I said, if anything we've said here today interests you, it's free to follow. It just shows us that you're supporting and you're interested, and that it'll help us get our launch date even quicker.
That'll be great. Now, of course, as far as like that era, mm-hmm. Were you somebody that was familiar with that era? Because it sounds like Greg was more familiar with it than you were, maybe.
Well, he played that character, but I'd say I'm more familiar with it because I was the history buff in real life. And so I had written this whole noir pilot that I liked too, that I kind of try to, you know, take some ideas from that and bring it into Hostmortem because I just love that time period. That's why I love film noir as well. You know, the 40s was such a unique time and I'm trying to capture some of that magic, some of that. What I find so interesting about film noir is that I think it's also like a bunch of things that shouldn't work together that do. It's like a Caravaggio painting. It's pulp stories from the 40s as seen through like German expressionism directors from the 30s. And it's like those things don't even seem to make sense and yet they come out beautifully. And that's what I try to do with Hostmortem is you're taking fake detective game shows from the 90s, you're taking a murder mystery from the 1940s, you're taking trivia and humor and hosting and wrapping it all up and it's coming out into this this graphic novel, which I might add, I also have a number of artists who weighed in and did some covers for me. I did a Star Wars novel a number of years ago called Star Wars Force Collector. And my artist for that cover was Tony Foti. So Tony, I was a big fan of. And so he was the first call I made when I came up with the idea of Host Mortem and said, hey, can you, you know, come up with a cover for me? And he did. And it's beautiful. But then I got, you know, I got rolling, and there's a gentleman named Timothy Anderson, who, if you know anything about pulp or Blade Runner, he took Blade Runner and made a cover as if it was a 1940s pulp novel. And it looked great. And I asked him to do one for me, and he did it. And then lastly, there's a gentleman named Jesse Larson, who has a great like Edward Gorey style, which I thought, oh, it's so when I saw this thing that he did for me, I want it framed in my living room. It's so beautiful. And there are certain things like that that are as rewards when you back Host Mortem. And I'm just going to get into that for a bit, because what I love about Kickstarter, and one of the reasons I'm doing this through Kickstarter, is I've definitely found that that is the new comic book community. You know, I find even as a backer or an investor, I go to Kickstarter for the next new great idea in comics. Mm-hmm. And so what I've tried to do is offer rewards that really resonate with that audience. So in addition to the normal things of like artwork from the book or the chance to get murdered off in the book or things like that, we're also offering like a chance for Damien and I to critique or give you pointers on your comic book. You mentioned the voiceover work I do. I'm offering a chance for me to do voiceover narration for your next project. You know, you could have dinner with Greg and I, where we can talk about your hopes and dreams in the business and see how we can help you, things like that. So there, I try to figure out what's very unique about what we're offering. And so, like I said, I think it's definitely worth checking out to see all the different types of rewards that we're offering for Host Mortem.
Now, I got to ask, because this is one thing that I always wanted, and I finally found somebody who did it in a format that I could afford. Are you going to let people get drawn into your book?
Yes. Or has the, yes, oh, that is another one. You could have your likeness in there. You can have your name in there. You can get murdered off in the book. There are all these opportunities to be part of the collaboration, you know? So when you buy this book, you can proudly say, hey, that's me on page 4 getting murdered or something like that. You know what I mean? So, I wanted there to be a give and take, because when I'm backing other things, that's what I look for as well, to be part of it.
Because I was supporting it was a book about a Moby Dick that came back from the dead, and he I forget the exact title of it, but he did this wonderful thing, and he actually had, you could get drawn in as a part of the people on the boat that was chasing him. And so I said, I could actually afford that. So I jumped on that and got on that. The thing was, I couldn't find myself in the book. Well, that was because
– you're kidding.
When I sent my picture, of course, this was in the from people from the 1800s, and I was wearing glasses, and they took the glasses off
me. Oh, so you didn't recognize yourself.
I didn't know myself. They said, look on this page and look there. And I went, oh, wait a minute. That's me without glasses. Okay, now I get it.
That's so funny. Well, yes, we definitely have that opportunity. And I should mention that Clover Press is going to be distributing our book. And if you know Clover, you know, what I love about them and why I was so excited when they were interested is the fact that I just think what they do has such a prestigious look to it. And those books are more than just books. They're pieces of art that I want to, you know, display in my library, not just have in my library. So when they said they'd be interested in doing this, I thought, if I can be on the shelf next to their works of like The Spirit or Dick Tracy or any of those, you know, then I'm in good company.
Wow. I'll say. That would be something. Now, I know. I got to ask, what's the art style like inside the book? Does it vary from chapter to chapter? Is it because noir and stuff, I always think black and white. Is it color?
Well, we've got, like I said before, each issue looks a little different. And so some are in color, some are in black and white. Some look like a golden age comic for a reason. Some are a mixture of things. So that's what I think kind of really is the pulse of this too, which is, you know, there's more than one personality in this storyline. And so I thought each one should be represented that way. And Damien has this great style that I love. And Pippa does this great job of coloring it. But sometimes I think, you know, because it is noir, some issues I think deserve to be just black and white. Mm-hmm. But everything also services the story. I'm not doing anything just for the fun of, oh, let's make this black and white. Let's make this color. Everything services an idea that we're going for in the storyline. So you'll see that when the book comes out.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be a big success because
I hope so.
Lots of good stuff going on with it and interesting characters and great story going on. I love murder mysteries too. I used to watch Investigation Discovery until I it would discourage me. So all these spouses would kill the main person. And I'd be like, I don't know if I want to get married. I'll end up getting killed.
It does scare you away from things like that, doesn't it? I mean, my God, Double Indemnity is one of my favorite movie, and it's I mean, how can you get into a relationship after seeing that movie?
Yeah, that's. I feel like there's Bruce Timm did a story about Robin, and let's just say Robin doesn't fare well in this movie.
I'm sure.
It was Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker, and I can't look at Robin the same anymore. So you never know. But if this is a success, and I'm expecting it will be, do you have other ideas that we might have Postmortem 2? Or
I totally do. In fact, originally I thought maybe I would pull in some of my other host friends because if you remember the 90s, for some reason, there were a lot of fake detectives in the 90s where there was, you know, there are all these mystery theme shows like Blue's Clues and Figure It Out and Cluedo and, you know, Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. So I had this idea of trying to pull in more hosts, but then I realized I had enough story just with Greg and I. So I shelved those ideas, but definitely have plans for future issues or future graphic novels. And like I said, future novels, just straight up novels. But the fun part of this was, when I was trying to put it together, I was like, all right, well, how will I promote this? Well, I guess I can go to Comic-Con. What would I do? I can invite some friends to talk. And I thought, wait a minute. This is shaping up to be like a live action improv game show that I could take on the road. Host Mortem, you know, are hosts smarter? They just have the answers to see if the hosts can fare better than the audience members with these questions. So we're trying to mount that as well as a side thing. But right now, everything hinges on Host Mortem, the graphic novel. So like I said, I'll repeat myself again, hostmortem.com, go to Kickstarter. Also, if you sign up for free, you'll know when we're launching, but you'll also be the first to hear about these early bird specials where you can get in quickly because there are going to be opportunities, a few of them for, like you said, being drawn into it, you know, meeting up with us, Zoom sessions, video sessions, all stuff that Greg and I are happy to offer.
Great. It sounds like good stuff because there's a local because I live in Central Florida, and there is a mystery theater kind of thing.
That's awesome. Go there.
And they have several actors and stuff. They don't decide until they do the play in front of you who the actual.
That's great. I've seen those before. Yeah, that's amazing. I love that.
What you're working on, I think there's an audience for that. I totally do. Because I love to go there and do that. And the funniest thing is they always ask you, why did you say that? And the people, friends will pick out of the blue, will say, well, I thought that person had a bad hairstyle.
That's hilarious.
And that's hilarious. That made him a murderer. And I'm sitting there going, I'm counting clues and putting things left and right and trying to figure out how this all worked. And they're just, there was a friend of mine used to be that she was part of a football thing that people would pick who was going to win. She would pick the people who would win based on if she liked the colors of their uniform.
That's how some people do that. I know.
She would win every time. And the people.
Are you kidding me? That's amazing. Yep. That's amazing.
The people who sat there and they knew the shoe size of the pit players and on and on and on about
this.
There's
a philosophy there somewhere.
She just knocked them off. They finally knocked her out of the whole business so the rest of them could sit and do it. So I got a huge kick out of that. But I love mysteries just like you do. I love to see crazy stuff. I love something that challenges my thinking. It makes me sit there and think.
Me too. So, and that's why, like I said, I wanted this to be a legitimate murder mystery that had to be solved. It'll be funny. It'll be all those things. It'll be filled with trivia. But at its core, it's going to be a very good murder mystery.
So where do you stand as far as like production of it and stuff like that? When do you think it's going to be completed?
Well, we'll launch it either the end of February or beginning of March. We also have a big name comic book artist who's going to do a cover for us. But we can't announce that just yet. Another reason to sign up for the Kickstarter so you find out who that is. I think most of book one or issue one is done and we're moving forward. So if we launch in the early March, I'd say probably within a year's time, it'll be in people's hands.
Okay. That'd be good. You've got a head start. I've known several Kickstarter people who, let's just say, wait until everything is complete to do it.
This day and age. People want to see what they're getting, and people don't want to. I mean, look, I know there are delays for different reasons and stuff, but as a backer too, you know, I want my book and I put it out there, and it's nice to know that it's in the works and it's coming your way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing I backed one that I had interviewed the guy and supported him, and I heard nothing for like 3 years. And all of a sudden, one day.
3 years?
Yep. And all of a sudden in the mail, there it was. And I said, holy smoke. I said, I can't believe it. So I was glad to get it. And of course, he's since then announced he's not going to do that anymore because it was took too much out of him.
Well, the other thing that's key in this is, just like we said before with creating comics, communication. So I'm going to be keeping the backers up to date weekly, monthly, whatever it takes, so that you don't think, what the heck happened to that? And in fact, right now I have a Substack called Game Show Gumshoe, where I not only talk about the business and, you know, my career and a whole bunch of things, but I keep people up to date with Host Mortem, all the press it's getting, all the things that are going on with Host Mortem. So they can also find it at Game Show Gumshoe. It's kevinshinnick.substack.com. Or, like I said, follow me across social media. I am at Kevin Shinnick, and that's Kevin, S-H-I-N-I-C-K, across social media. And because no one likes to be left in the dark. And if you're good enough to back this project, then we should be good enough to keep you informed.
Well, let me tell you my Dark Knight Returns story.
All right.
Frank Miller. I remember when the first issue came out, I was there with bells on. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to read this. And I read that one and I said, when's the next one coming out? And they said, next month. Oh boy. I said, so there I was the next month, and I bought issue 2. The issue 3 did not come out until 6 months later. This was the real thing. It wasn't just me. It was this is the way. And then issue 4, I thought I was never going to see.
Wow.
Because it was a year after issue 3 came out that the 4th issue came. Now, of course, everybody goes, well, you can read the whole story by the graphic novel.
Now you can, sure, yeah. But remember, I rewatched The Sopranos recently, which was fun because when you were watching it in real time, there was like 2 years between seasons 3 and 4, I think. You know what I mean? It's like, it's the same thing. You kind of lose the momentum, which is why at first I thought about releasing this as issues like other people have done. But then I thought, no, I think it's going to be worth the wait to get all 4 issues in one glorious book. So, like I said, I don't think it'll take that long to get to you. And if you do back it, I think you're going to be really happy with the result because the artwork alone is really just something beautiful.
I have to tell a quick Star Trek Deep Space Nine story, which I love. And when it was on the television, my brother had access to a satellite dish and it was in syndication. So he would be able to download the episode and we would get together and watch it. And then we'd have to wait, of course, another week for the next one to come. But now, of course, that whole series is gone. It's been about 20 years. And there are people who come in and when they're streaming it, they watch and watch and watch and watch and watch and watch. And we were at a convention. We were talking to this one younger guy. He says, I streamed it all in a week. A week, I said. And my friend said, well, I both envy you and pity you. He says,
I know. It's true.
We used to have to sit and think about what's going to happen, what's going to happen, what's going to happen. And then it would come and we'd see what happened. We'd talk about what happened. But they don't, there's none of that for them. There's no waiting. There's just, they just get it all done. In some ways, I think that's good for them. But on the other hand, I liked wondering.
I did too. I mean, the grass is always greener. You know, I love, when it first started, I love the idea of binging. But then, like I said, I feel like I'm running a marathon. Like it's late in the night and I should just finish it, but I'm not enjoying it anymore. It's more like homework, which is why certain shows now, when they do come out, like Only Murders in the Building or something like that, I try and watch in real time because you do have to wait. Remember, we had to wait 3 years to figure out if Darth Vader was really Luke's dad. You know what I mean? It's those things where you forget because now everything is so instantaneous.
Yeah. There's a Star Trek animated show called Prodigy. It was on Paramount Plus, and then they canceled it and went over to Netflix.
Okay.
And they released all 20 episodes at once. And everybody was having this debate. What do we do? What do we do? Do we watch them all?
Yeah,
or do we like the episode and stuff? And my biggest problem was that you can set Netflix up so that it misses You don't get the title sequence anymore. It just goes straight to the episode.
Oh, right, right.
And then
right.
It goes right. It misses the end sequence. And so I'd be up at 2 in the morning going, I'll watch one more. Just one more. That's all I'll do. And, you know, I loved that, though. But it was that's the thing about that was my first experience with that kind of thing. Yeah. But
I miss opening title sequences.
Oh,
like
yeah.
When I told you, when I rewatched The Sopranos, I would play the open every time because it gets you in the mood, you know, that song and that opening particularly. But I know for time management, you want to cut out those things.
Well, I want to know what happens. That's my biggest problem. What happens?
Yeah, I know. It's so funny.
All right. So you talked about some of the stuff. Are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
That I can talk about, like I said, the Dick Clark thing is the biggest thing at the moment. We are going to do Hostmortem. We're going to try and launch that also as that law. I'm going to come right to you in Florida now that you say there's an appetite for the murder mystery theater thing there.
Oh boy.
But yeah, I've got a couple of shows that I've done some voice work for. They're going to premiere this year, probably in the next couple of months. And I'm hoping to jump back into the comic book world, aside from Hostmortem. So I'll keep you posted.
So you wrote my favorite character, Batman.
Yeah, that was my first comic book. I mean,
really?
I came right out of the gate. I had written a sketch on Robot Chicken involving Batman because I love Batman. Anything I can do, I will use Batman. Mm-hmm. And a editor from DC approached me and said, hey, I loved your Batman sketch. And I was like, oh, thanks. I love Batman. He was like, you should write a comic for us. I was like, you can't just throw that out there if you don't mean it. And he was like, no, to prove he wasn't kidding, he let me at my first Batman. My first comic book was a story in the Batman 80-page giant. And it was about Mr. Freeze and Commissioner Gordon and Batman and stuff. And it was great. And then later on, I did Joker's Asylum 2, which was a story about Batman and Clayface. So, you know, I've had my share, which is just a dream come true.
Any more Batman in your future, maybe?
I'd love that. I can't say that I have anything in my future at the moment, but I love that. You know what's so funny is I keep thinking I've kind of inched my way closer and closer to Hostmortem, whether I knew it or not, because I, as I said, worked with Batman, the world's greatest detective. I wrote Scooby-Doo and Kiss, so I've worked with the murder, with the mystery machine, and then I also helped launch the series, the Mike Tyson's Mysteries. So you know, it's been in the water for a while, and I think now, like I just said earlier, I was looking to do something for myself, and I just took all the things I learned at all those shows and tried to put it into this.
Well, you know, I've got to say, one of the things that drives me up the wall screaming is the fact that it's called Detective Comics and there's no detective stuff going on.
I know. It's true. It's true.
Batman losing his hand and having to run around and chase
him. I know.
I'm going that's not Batman. Batman's supposed to be a detective.
Well, what do you think of the Batman, the movie? Because that was kind of leaning back towards the detective of it all. Do you agree?
Yeah, he's too young though. He should have been Dick Grayson, not Bruce Wayne.
Well,
so I had trouble with that.
Yeah, I got you.
But see, everybody has their favorite Batman, and mine was Ben Affleck because he actually looked like what Batman. And
he did look just like the comics. He really did.
He should have been. And I don't care what costume he's wearing. I don't care what he's doing. He's Batman to me. So
I got you. Well, I grew up with Keaton, so I can't go wrong with him.
I mean, I liked him. I
thought he was the best Bruce Wayne. That's why he's my favorite Batman, because I thought he was the most interesting Bruce Wayne. But
what did you think of the Flash movie, by the way?
You know, the Flash movie, I walked away liking it more than I thought, because it is kind of all over the place. But just to see Michael Keaton back was a joy. And there's a lot of fun in it, too. It goes a little off the rails, maybe more than a little. But there were bits in it that I really enjoyed. So I have to go back and rewatch and see if it holds up. But I was a little shocked at first. I was like, oh, this is the kind of movie it is. It's a little out there. But I did enjoy it at the end of the day.
I saw it twice. I even liked it better the second time. Enjoyed the first one. Yeah.
That's great.
The only thing, I was with some friends. And that title sequence with the babies going around.
Yes.
It drove one of my friends crazy because he didn't like the special effects.
Well, the CG was not very good, especially when this is a spoiler, but I'm not going to say it, but at the end when they have the big moment of, you know, whatever, metaverse, the animation of the CG was not very good, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, there won't be a Flash 2. Doesn't
look
no, like,
there so won't. At least not with this character.
Well, okay, you mentioned how they follow you on social media, right?
Yes, at Kevin Shinnick.
Okay.
So I'm on Instagram. I'm on X. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on where else? Any place that I can be, I'm at Kevin Shinnick.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll have to follow you there to make sure we keep up with what you're up to.
Please do. Yeah. A lot of good stuff coming this year. A lot of great stuff. I'm very excited because, you know, we've all been through it's been a tough couple of years coming out of COVID and all sorts of things. So I'm happy to look forward and see all the good things that I've got coming up.
Well, I wish you much success. It's been fun talking with you. I hope we get to do it again sometime.
Me too. Absolutely.
It's a lot of fun. Postmortem, again, it is a graphic novel from Emmy-winning writer and host. They didn't put your name in there. That's the funny part.
That is funny, yeah.
But you see you under the person who created it, so any mystery there will be solved.
Yes, exactly.
So be sure to back it.
Thanks for having me on.
It's good to talk with you, and I'm sure it's going to be a big success. So keep doing the wonderful stuff.
Thank you so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.